What up, everyone? This episode is brought to you by HelloFresh. We know how it is at this point. We've been talking about it. With HelloFresh, you get pre-measured ingredients and mouth-watering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. Here's what HelloFresh does. They cut out the sucky part of cooking. And I love cooking. Cooking is like literally one of my favorite activities. When I'm not working, driving cars, or talking about cars, I'm cooking meals that take a really long time. But even that, which is one of my favorite recreational activities, has sucky parts, like trying to decide what to eat, what to make, and then buying ingredients at the store that might not come in the appropriately measured quantity. So you have to either buy way more than you need of something or buy multiple packages of something to make the recipe that you need. HelloFresh solves this, right? They offer 50 menu and market items each week, including ready-to-eat salads, sandwiches, and soups, but also make-from-scratch items. There's something for everyone to enjoy with recipes designed and tested by professional chefs and nutritional experts to ensure deliciousness and simplicity. And you just choose what you want. They send the packages to your door each week, right? Contact free. And basically, everything you need to cook that meal is right there in that bag, pre-measured, okay? And you get a really easy chart, recipe chart. You can just kind of glance at it real quickly to make this stuff pre-measured, pre-portioned, so there's really no food waste. It's great. It doesn't take up a lot of room in your fridge. Super flexible. You can always change your plan whenever you want. It was so good. Hannah and I kept doing it after our free ad read food ran out. We kept it going. The food was great, and it inspired me to cook things I wouldn't have thought to cook in my normal repertoire. It opened my horizons for cooking. You can too. Go to HelloFresh.com/smokingtire14 and use code smokingtire14 for up to 14 free meals plus free shipping, right? HelloFresh.com/smokingtire14 and code smokingtire14 for up to 14 free meals plus free shipping. Woo! HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit for a reason. It's delicious. I like it a lot. Speaking of things I like a lot, JB Weld. JB Weld is one of those things. Not only is it the world's strongest bond, it's so good at its job, it's like a verb, right? Like you can, it's not just like I'm going to fix this using JB Weld. It's I'm going to JB Weld it, like Google. Like it's a verb. You JB Weld it to fix it. That's how you know something is like really good and efficient at its job when it's so the standard that you can verb it up. It's amazing. Whether it's DIY projects, automotive repairs, plumbing, marines, or marines. I wouldn't fix a marine with JB Weld. There's probably an asterisk on the box not to use it on a marine. But marine applications like your boat, projects big and small at home in your garage, use JB Weld. In fact, JB Weld products can be used on practically anything. Metal, wood, plastics, glass, ceramics, and more. Not marines. Not humans.
When I was in high school, I cracked the Jeep bumper cover on our Jeep, and it was hanging off. And my dad used JB Weld to reseal it. And 15 years later, it was still
there,
still holding strong.
Yep. You can keep some JB Weld in the toolbox. Keep it in your kitchen drawer. Keep it in the back of your truck. Speaking of trucks, JB Weld acquired Herculiner, the original DIY truck bed liner. So if you're looking for the world's strongest truck bed liner, Herculiner has you covered there as well. Go be your strongest self. Use JB Weld, the world's strongest bond. JB Weld epoxy products are made proudly in the USA and available at jbweld.com, Walmart, Amazon, Home Depot, Lowe's, AutoZone, Advance Auto Parts, Napa, O'Reilly, Michaels, and more. JB Weld. Just JB Weld it. That's the tagline. Mm-hmm. JB Weld it. You know that like tagline? If you can't duck it, fuck it. If you can't JB Weld it, all hope is lost.
That's true.
Because JB Weld can fix the things you can't duck.
Just about everything.
You know? And of course, they're brought to you by NordVPN. Listen, privacy. Privacy is good. Okay, and if you were going to say, take a poop in a public bathroom, right? You're probably going to close the stall door unless you're some kind of sick voyeur that wants someone to see into your toilet life. Now, think of your computer as your toilet life. In fact, depending on who you are, they might be one and the same. You don't want people looking in there, unless you really do, but most of you probably don't, right? Close that stall door with NordVPN. You can access content from over 59 countries by changing your virtual location. Geo restrictions no longer become an issue. Plus, if you're traveling and use unsecure airport or restaurant Wi-Fi, public Wi-Fi, that's your restroom. It's public Wi-Fi is where data hackers steal your data. You get on that Wi-Fi, your computer's unsecured. They're just sitting there at the cafe looking good. Maybe they got a nice like jacket on. Maybe they're like winking at you. Maybe they're flirting. It's not necessarily the 400-pound fat guy. They have good-looking hackers too. I've seen those movies. That's how they steal your stuff. If you use NordVPN, that's how you keep your peace of mind while you're traveling and using public Wi-Fi. Now, VPNs in general have a reputation for slowing down internet speed, but not with NordVPN. It is the world's fastest VPN, so you don't have to sacrifice internet speed for better security. Your internet traffic is rerouted through a secure encrypted tunnel, which protects your data and privacy. And you can also download NordVPN on up to 6 devices at once. Now, I know when I'm going to poop, I like to close the door. Some people might think differently, but I like to make sure that door is closed. Close the door when you poop on the internet as well. Go to nordvpn.com/smokingtire or use code TIRE to get a 2-year plan plus a bonus gift with a huge discount. There's a 30-day money-back guarantee if NordVPN is not for you, so there's no risk, but 2-year plan plus a bonus gift with a huge discount at nordvpn.com/smokingtire or code TIRE. And of course, our friends TCF Tradecraft Farms, the official, you know, entertainment provider of the Smoking Tire podcast. Whether it's cannabinoids, CBD, pens, aerosols, or just pure, delightful flowers, Tradecraft Farms has got you covered. If you are here in the promised land, California, where these types of things are available at retail outlets, pick up some at their Tradecraft Farms official retail boutiques. If you're not in town, just give them a follow. Tradecraft_farms. Let them know I sent you over to the gram. And then think about it when you do come to town. We've got you covered at Tradecraft Farms, the official THC and CBD provider of the Smoking Tire podcast. Alrighty, folks, on this episode, a dude I've seen on TV for many, many years. I'm excited to finally talk to him. He was one of the co-hosts of the show Mythbusters, super, super, super successful show, ran 12 seasons, which is enormous in American television. And Tori was a huge part of that. He is into cars, and he has a new show on the Motor Trend Network, along with our friends Busy as a Rioja and Faye Hadley from Two Girls Garage. It's Tori Bellici, the host of the new Motor Mythbusters on the Motor Trend Network. It's the Smoking Tire Podcast. Thanks for your time, man. I'm sorry for this.
Yeah, totally.
Mild delay of game. I was like an enormous, enormous Mythbusters fan. Enormous. Oh, watch, yeah, all that shit. What a fun show. It's like the best job ever.
It literally was the best job ever. I mean, it still is. It's crazy that we're back doing it again.
Is it the same with Motor Mythbusters? Is this the same production company and all that? Or is it just we've borrowed the name because it makes sense?
No, it's the same production company. I am the only returning Mythbuster from the original cast. So I have two new co-hosts, BC and Faye, and they're both like genius car, you know,
yeah,
gearheads in their own right. Like, they're geniuses. And it's been great. I mean, it's weird. It's very weird. Like, the first day on set, you know, we're filming, and it's like, I'm looking around, and it's like, I'm getting deja vu.
Well, is it weird, though? Is it weird being on that set and getting the deja vu, but, like, it's all different people, and you're like, oh, this is kind of strange. Like, I love Busy. I've known Busy for like 6 years, and that dude he's the homie. I love him. He builds builds the silliest, stupidest shit in the world, and he knows it's silly and stupid, and it's great.
But he is a genius.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That guy is he is brilliant, and he's just like allowing us to do stuff that we would never be able to do in the old days because he's so technologically brilliant that he's like, oh, let me check the data on this. Oh, let me hook this up to the engine. Oh, we'll figure out how much. And I'm just sitting there going, okay, I'll just smile and crash some stuff.
Well, he puts, you know, when I say he builds silly shit, I don't mean he builds it haphazardly or badly. He professionally builds things that have very little objective real purpose. It's just like,
right. Like toys. Like the minivan? The
perfect
minivan?
Example. Did you drive it?
No.
Well,
I see
he's you got to drive
it to work, but yeah, I got it. I mean, he's got like multiple cars. So he's like, oh, you got to try this one out. You got to try this one out. I'm like, BC, you keep telling me to try these out. Like, when are you gonna,
dude? You gotta. It's the van is worth your time. Like, seriously, make the time. I made a whole film with the van, reviewing it up in the canyons, and you know, it's for those who have no idea what we're talking about. It's a 1,000 horsepower Odyssey. Big single turbo on is it a J series ZEC V6, whatever the 3.5 liter V6, mm-hmm. Big turbo, manual swap, front wheel drive, and Busy, BC's like, we kept blowing gearboxes and we found the solution was to just put terrible tires. And so having shitty tires would really save the gearbox.
That is a great impersonation of him.
I told you, I know him well. I've recorded like mad voiceover of him.
He is so proper. I think I might have tainted him because like when he came in, he was like all, you know, polite and like, oh, I would like the opportunity to help you build this. And then by the end of it, he was just being a sarcastic jerk just like me.
He is, but when you put a camera on him, he without a script or anything, like he speaks in voiceover. It's so fucking weird. He doesn't have to do voiceover because he just does it there.
It's just like, yeah, it's weird.
Just like get a room tone,
BC,
we're good.
Break come on, talk real with me. You sound like a script.
Dude, he's a genius and just crazy. So the thing is, when you put shitty tires on a 1,000 horsepower minivan in order to save the gearbox from eating itself, there's two things happen. One is you have very little handling or stopping power because those tires have other jobs. And then you can do burnouts in any gear at any speed. So just pick a gear. Doesn't matter. Any will do. Smash the throttle, and you will light the fucking tires right off. It's amazing.
And so you've driven it.
Oh yeah, I did. Like I put like 200 miles on it. Yeah, it was awesome.
Well, he's so ridiculous. I'm like, a minivan, really? I mean, it's like of all the vehicles. I go, what, are you gonna go drop the kids off at soccer practice? And then he's like, gets in and he's like burning wheelies.
And it sounds, you know, because it's got that dump exhaust, it sounds like an F1 car. So if you rip that thing up the block, you know, and people look around like they're expecting to see like a GTR with like a giant wing or, you know, and then this van.
And they're like, where's that sound coming from? Yeah, all I see is this ridiculous purple van.
Oh, the best. The best. Are you, I mean, obviously you're into machines and stuff like that. Or were you, before doing this, did you consider yourself a gearhead really?
Yeah. You know, like on this show, and that's kind of partially why they asked me to come back to do it. Originally they had, you know, they said, hey, we're going to redo Mythbusters. And my first thought was, I was a little hesitant just because it's like, we've already done it. Like why we did it. It was a success. I'm not sure if I want to come back. And they're like, well, we're going to be doing
We left the inbox open the whole time. Turns out there's like 10,000 myths we need to bust.
Yeah.
There's this Gmail Since address that's ended, just full of them.
these myths have just been piling up.
Yeah.
And so when they told me it was going to be Motor Mythbusters on Motor Trend, I got excited. Just because... In the original series, whenever we were doing car stuffs, I was like giddy because I love driving fast. I love, you know, racing. I love, you know, just stunt driving. Like, we used to have guys come out, like highway patrol officers who, you know, would train us how to do the pit maneuvers, how to get out of a, you know, a spin, you know. They, so when they were saying that we're going to do the whole show is going to be around cars, that's when they got me.
Yeah, that's probably a pretty easy sell. If you're like, oh, every day is car stunt day?
It's
awesome.
An awesome concept. Yeah.
That's fucking
awesome
great.
Concept.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, man, some of the stuff from the old show, but, like, I didn't really, other than yourself, I didn't really get the vibe that anyone from the original show was really that into cars to begin with. I mean, they were, you know, a means to solving myths or whatever, but nobody was like rolling up in their hot rod, right? Or am I missing one?
That's no, you're right on that. I mean, a lot of everybody was very, I mean, I would say Adam might, he was kind of into cars. Like, he's got a couple of cool cars that, but he's not your typical hot rodder. And me, I, you know, like I said, I love driving fast. I love going, you know, just driving cool cars. You know, a few years, maybe about 5 years ago, I did the Gumball Rally with Dead Mouse. And
oh, it really? Was, nice. You know, like, in one of his like meme supercars.
We did. Yeah. The first year we did, he did the Ferrari, which took a Ferrari, made it look like Nyan Cat. It had like this, you know, the Nyan Cat. And then
it was fun. I remember that. Ferrari got pissed. But
Ferrari actually, I didn't know they could do that. So apparently they sent him a letter of cease and desist.
They wouldn't really do anything. They just wouldn't let you buy the new cars. They're not going to sue. It's not a good look to sue individuals for customizing their own cars. That's a bad look.
Yeah. But it was hilarious. Like, he popped off all the Ferrari emblems and put like a little cat, like a leaping cat. So they were like, you know, take those logos off, send it back. So he like stripped it down, took it back to the original, sold it. But there was one point where when they sent him the letter, he was like, hey, do you think we could blow up the Ferrari?
Yes.
And I'm like, yes, we can absolutely blow up the Ferrari. Why would we? Like, why would you? Like, that is the dumbest idea.
That's like, it's like in the last couple of years, a lot of people have protested various companies, you know, actions by destroying their own shit that they've already bought, you know? Yeah. Like, I understand if you're angry that a company whose products you like does something or gives to the wrong politician or doesn't support the right cause or whatever, or God forbid says you have to wear masks or something like that, and, you know, fucking set my Coleman cooler on fire, like, whatever. Like, but it's your cooler. Right. Like,
you're going to buy another one. Right.
It's like in Goodfellas. Yeah. She's like, they spit on their own floor.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me. Yeah. Just give them coffee and be polite.
No, but Deadmau5 very publicly went to became a McLaren fan after that and spent all the money on all the McLarens after that.
So that was – so after we did the first rally we did together, we went from Miami to Ibiza, and then – as we were on the road, we met all these guys from Saudi Arabia, and they all have McLarens, and they're just like, "Ah, Ferrari, McLaren's the way to go." And
so did they tell you that, like, they owned McLaren, like the company? Yes, we own. We can get you a location, no problem. You just get you give us number. We send McLaren. It's best car.
It's crazy. Like, these guys have so much money. I'm a friend of mine that we, you know, since the rally, we became really good friends. That year he had a Hollywood company build the tumbler from Batman.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, that's fucking crazy.
Oh, dude, this thing looks so, I mean, it was legit. It looked just like the one from the movie. It rolled up and it was like the little geek inside of me just teared up because I was like, oh my God, it's a Batmobile.
Yeah, a functional Batmobile. I mean, look at the shirt you're wearing. You got straight Michael Keaton Batman happening right now.
There you go.
That looks like it was actually from 1990, maybe, that shirt. Was that from, is that in period?
It's, I stole it from Michael Keaton, yeah, from the movie set. I stole it. But so we roll out of Miami, and he gets on the freeway, and we don't even get out of the city, and the car breaks down on the side of the road, and so they couldn't finish the rally because the tumbler exploded, the engine blew up.
And so. Can I say that might have been a little predictable to do like a multi-continent high-speed road trip in a movie prop?
In a six-wheeled vehicle that weighs 8,000 pounds.
Just might not work out the way that you think it's going to.
But he was so pissed because he'd spent all this money getting this vehicle.
This is fucking bullshit. Did he just like get an Uber to like the Pagani dealer and buy a Huayra out of spite? That's what somebody like that would do.
No, I think they had a follow vehicle that was also built in the same vein. I forget if they brought another. They probably had like backup McLarens.
Yeah, yeah.
But he
like
was
in Top
so
Gear,
pissed.
You know, the punishment car is like a base McLaren. Yeah. It's like, bro, I cannot be seen. It's a 570S, bro. Bro, I cannot be seen in 570S.
The next year we did it, he takes a Lamborghini and he strips it down to the chassis and the engine and then builds another fiberglass Batmobile based off the video game. He took the specs from the video game and sent it to a company and they built it. And that one worked. And that one got like a ton of press. I mean, it was
based on like a Huracan or something.
I took a Lamborghini and I stripped it down to the chassis and I was like, dang, like that, like you just took a brand new Lamborghini and stripped it down. And he's like, oh, they're cheap in my country. And I'm like, how cheap? He's like, you know, you can pick them up for like 250, 300,000.
And I'm like, economies of scale, like, bro.
it's like a different world, right? Yeah.
Although our homie is in Dubai and he regularly sends me, there's a website over there called Dubizzle. And just by the name, you can tell what year it was launched, but it's called Dubizzle. And it's like somewhere between Craigslist and eBay in Dubai. And he sends me links for, you know, for them, they don't have a lot of like sense of like the thing I wanted when I was growing up. It's either some crazy concourse thing or it's the newest, fastest, flashiest, most expensive. And so the kind of stuff that retains value, the so-called secondhand enthusiast cars here, like the Ferrari 430s and 575s, that shit is worthless in the Middle East. Nobody wants it. And so you can get, you know, a Ferrari 360 or something over there, paddle shift, for, I mean, literally like $40,000for nothing. Audi R8s are like, they're just fucking cranking through them things. And
it's Acuras.
Because once it's not the newest shit anymore, like no one cares. It's just not, they can't sell it. So, and they treat the cars really badly over there and it's really hot. The paint's all faded. So like you could buy this shit, but it's a pain in the ass to send it back here. But the guy's not wrong. Whatever he's buying in the Middle East is probably 40% off whatever it costs here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and it just the mindset, right? It's like, that's what you do when you have more money than you know what to do with.
Oh, yeah.
Go build a Batmobile out of a Lamborghini. I mean,
you know,
why wouldn't you?
There's far less interesting things that person could have done. You know what I mean? Off-the-rack seven-figure cars that you know, you pick a color and a leather and you write a check for $2 million, and 3 years later it shows up.
This,
you know?
R8 is $44,000.
Fuck yeah, dude. Look at that. It's a 14. It's not even like an 09. A 14 in a good color. $44,000. I'm telling you. Oh, but look, you can look at the fucking bolsters. I can smell that car through the screen.
Yeah.
That car smells like cigarettes and cocoa butter. It's fucked. Oh, it's a stick, though. It's a stick?
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, all right. A stick. It's not. No, it's not. It's never mind. Sorry, my bad. But it's got, and that floor mat says, I give no fucks. Yeah.
That's aftermarket.
$44,000. But I wasn't fucking around. $44,000.
No, it's a different mindset for sure.
Dubizzle is, you know, key. If you ever find yourself bored, go to Dubizzle. Keyword gold. Just trust me on that. The keyword is gold.
What do you mean? Come,
like your cars that are fully wrapped or plated in gold,
yes,
like crazy gold trim, all kind of shit.
You're 100% right. We were in Dubai 2018. Went to Abu Dhabi for the F1 races, and then went to Dubai right after that, and just like toured around. And I mean, what an incredible city, right?
It's an interesting place, right?
It was a desert, and now it's like the most advanced city in the world.
Yeah. It was like someone just showed up in the desert with a postcard of Miami and just said, bro, you build this, but 30% bigger, right here. And then someone else had a postcard of the Vegas Strip. Habibi, right here, Bellagio, and everything else, but big. Just build that shit.
That's crazy. It's so beautiful.
Before Mythbusters, you were at ILM. Were you at Industrial Light and Magic? Did I read that right?
Yeah.
Tell me about that, because when I was a kid, that was like the dream job, like miniatures and practical effects. That's the shit.
That was the dream job for me as a kid. Like,
yeah,
you know, when I saw, let's see, in 77 is when I saw the first Star Wars came out, and right after that, there was a book that was published. It was The Art of Star Wars.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and they showed all the models and all the conceptual drawings of, you know, the different versions of Darth Vader. And I was just like, okay, I know what I want to do in life. I want to be a special effects guy. I want to work on models. I want to build, I want to do Star Wars. That's what I thought in my head, right?
I mean, but that's so cool that, like, it's like, listen, I'm going to do pro-level arts and crafts.
Yeah. Basic,
you know what I mean? Like,
right.
But you know what I mean? Right. It's like, it's such an achievable thing. It's not like I need some crazy level education. It's like, I need to get really good at fucking arts and crafts and then be in the right place. Kind of, right?
And everybody used to ask me, like, oh, did you build models when you were a kid? Like, did you get the kits? And I was like, no. Like, I used to try. Like, I remember I had like a van model, and I tried to start, you know, I started putting it together, and I just got so bored that I just started gluing parts together and built my own like little sculpture.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got to ILM, that's exactly what I ended up doing. I mean, it was like you would get the artwork from the art department, the art director would come in and give you a 2D drawing or, you know, a rendition of what the spaceship was going to look like or whatever we were building. And they're like, okay, make it in 3D. And so it was just complete fabrication, like from scratch. So
that's fun. That's an awesome, awesome gig.
And you weren't were you a trained engineer? I didn't see that you were. Or was it just you learned how to do stuff by doing it when you were younger?
I was just building stuff as a kid. Like, you know, my dad was very arts and crafts. I mean, he was an artist, sculptor. And so we had a whole shop in our garage. And I was using the bandsaw. Like, my dad would let me use the bandsaw before I could even reach the actual table. So he would have me on a little step ladder, and I would be up there with my little fingers, right?
Nice.
Close to the blade. You know, my mom was in the other room praying that I didn't cut my fingers off.
Everyone's got a thing their dad would let them do at an inappropriately young age. Bandsaw is really up there with most dangerous.
Yeah. Totally. But my dad was insane. Like, my dad was a bigger kid than us. Like, when 4th of July would come, like, he was the one setting off the illegal fireworks. And we were just kind of, you know, I was just like, wow, this is awesome. Like, he's not getting mad at us. He's actually encouraging us to go play with fireworks.
So then when did you first start seeing something that you made, like, on the screen and go, holy shit, that's really what happens?
The first movie was Starship Trooper, which is probably my favorite movie I ever worked on. I don't know if you saw that, Paul.
I've seen it. I saw it a long time ago. I saw it a few times when it was new. It was a big hit movie.
Yeah.
Now it's kind of a cult movie, right?
Oh, it's
kind of
totally
a cult classic.
Yeah.
My university had it in its class. They were like, this is a perfect. Yeah, my university, whatever class was, like, this is a perfect execution of, like, a patriotic army movie, but it's just set in an alien landscape. But they're like, it has all the tropes. It is like a skeleton of insert an army movie now. And so that's why we wanted to study it.
Just because
it's like, hoorah, and we're going to go get them, and alien, and tattoos, and all that stuff.
Yeah.
No, you're 100% right. Like the propaganda films that they were putting out there. You know, see the universe.
Day and...
Go kill bugs.
Exactly.
But so we were building ships, the Roger Youngs, which that was the name of the ship that the Space Marines were flying. And so we built these giant ships, and I remember going to the premiere and watching it on the big screen, and it took a second for me to. Like it ruined it for me for a second, because it was like, oh my God, that's the ship I built. That's a miniature. Like, that's not real.
And it took yourself out of the plot.
Yes,
I actually thought you were going to say it the other way. I thought you were going to say that you stayed in the plot and went right over the thing that you built, but actually it went the other way. It ruined it for you.
Totally.
Hey, that's fake.
Like, that's you guys, that thing's only like 3 feet tall.
Like, that's like an Onion article. Hey, that thing's fake, says guy who built miniature.
Right.
In theater.
Humans can't fit on the spaceship I built, says guy who built miniature. Avatar is not real, says James Cameron.
That's so cool, though. A big and for your first big thing to be a big spaceship that's an awful lot like a Star Wars, you know, battle cruiser or whatever. It's like totally a similar vibe, you know?
Yeah, completely. And it was funny because we were wrapping up that movie, you know, all the effects for that movie. And then there were little whispers going around the shop that Star Wars was coming, right? Episode one, George Lucas had just announced that he was going to redo, you know, do the prequels to Star Wars. And you could imagine the, like,
oh my God, the nerds must be losing their shit.
Oh, dude, seriously. Like, you know, because it was this weird game where you would try to, like, you know, not suck up, but, you know, be really nice to the whoever was in charge, whoever was the boss who was going to be the model supervisor on the next show.
Yeah.
You're like, hey, I'm almost done on this show. Like, use me. You know, I'm available. Yeah. I'll be available next week. But with Star Wars, people were losing their shit because it was just like, this is why we all got into this industry. It's Star Wars, the movie. and so people, you know, it was crazy because like models would roll in. There was, I remember seeing a sculpture of an alien, and it was like this cool new alien that they had just, you know, come up with. And the sculptor had sculpted a bust, you know, it was like the head of the alien. We were all like, oh my God, this is the new alien. And then the movie comes out and it's Jar Jar Binks and he opens his mouth and it just was like, what happened?
Everyone started to back.
Oh no, what if you sculpt something that turns into like a hateable character? Shit!
Dude, it was like we're all kind of looking at each other in the audience, you know, in the theater going, why is he talking like that?
I could just imagine the ILM office, though. It's like George Lucas announces a Star Wars. And then it's like someone smashes a red button and it sets off all the fucking sirens. And everyone's like losing their fucking minds. Like papers are just flying
people
everywhere.
Are coming down poles like firemen.
It's like the Naked Gun.
This is what you're trained for.
Code red, go!
Gold leader, standing by. Gold leaders.
Hot glue gun magazine.
That's awesome.
There was a memo that went out while we were working at ILM. They, you know, granted, you have a company full of nerds and geeks because we all wanted to work on Star Wars. So there was a memo that went out. If you see George Lucas in the hallway or the coffee room or whatever, don't approach him. Don't talk to him. Just ignore him, right? Because you can imagine everywhere he goes, you know, the geeks are like, okay, so what? Can you tell me what happened? Why are you thinking? You know, they were just like, he was God, right? He was the God of nerds.
And like, so, Katy Perry has the same rule, but for a completely different reason.
for different.
If she's at a rodeo, they're like, don't approach her.
And And so there was this moment where George Lucas came out onto set, and we had this spaceship that I had, you know, spent a lot of time working on. So when it went out to stage to film, light it and film it, I, you know, they would send a model maker out just to babysit it, make sure it looks good and is working properly. And so I'm out there, and every day the producers and the art director would come out and show us what we were doing and how to fix, you know, change this, do that. And George Lucas was with them this one time. And now I'm like freaking out, because again, he's my hero. And so he comes up to the model and he looks at me and he's all, does this part light up? And I just sit there and they're all looking at me and I'm like,
when the spoken producer's to, looking Tori, at when me spoken like, to.
Yeah, they're like, you can talk to Mr. Lucas. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. They told me I'd get fired if I talked to him. And then I just started talking. But it was like seriously a moment of, I was told I'm not supposed to talk to this guy.
Yeah. No, I can imagine that level of fear. Like, yeah. I need to answer this question from the guy, but someone's going to come tap me on the shoulder in 30 seconds and go, you're fucking shit can.
Or like somebody higher up the chain. Like, you tell him if it lights up. What? Yeah. I can't talk to this guy.
Hand signals, like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me.
What's like the biggest? Did you do full size stuff too, or is it always just miniatures?
We did. Yeah, when we did Matrix 2 and 3, we called them giant miniatures. So it was like
half scale, quarter scale kind of thing.
Like we did in Matrix 2, we did the city of Zion, and we built the gates of Zion and the control tower. And you know, those things, we were in a sound stage, you know, a hangar at an old Navy base. So it was like, you know, a 50 foot tall set that we were calling a miniature.
How tall was it? It was a 50 foot tall set playing a 100 foot tall set. Is that pretty much what?
No, but playing like probably, you know, like a 200 foot wall.
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah.
Something. So like quarter scale, something ridiculous, but it was, that was probably one of my other favorite movies that I worked on, were Matrix 2 and 3. We built so many insane models and destroyed them all. Like, basically, it was like we were building models, loading them with explosives, sending them down a wire to crash into something, and then blowing them up. I mean, it was just every day was like another.
That sounds like a nice thing to be doing at work, really. I mean, blowing something up every day sounds fun.
Very cathartic, I bet.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there any innovations in the explosion technology recently?
That's a good question. I mean, yeah, there are, you know, we're constantly blowing, we're constantly coming up with ways to blow stuff up in new ways.
On Motor Mythbusters, not that we need to give away the entire plot of the series or every episode, but what are some of the biggest myths that you guys address? I can see a literal Flintstones prop car.
Yes, that was one that a lot of people were not excited about. Me, I was like giddy because I loved Flintstones growing up. And actually, when I was a kid, maybe around 4 or 5, my parents took me on a trip to see the Grand Canyon. And on the way to the Grand Canyon, there's this creepy, weird Flintstones themed park out in the middle of the desert. It was like
Flintstones or dinosaurs?
No, Flintstones.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like, if you look it up, I think it's for sale now. But I mean, it's completely
abandoned. Really? Is a Flintstones park for sale in the desert? All right.
It's like Flintstones, but big.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I think it's in Arizona. And so we went out there and my parents just kind of let us loose. They were like, go. And this place was empty. That's what was so creepy about it. It was like this supposed theme park, but nobody was there. So it was me and my sister running around by ourselves. And it was almost like an abandoned, you know, creepy village. But there was somebody, you know, this park had built a full-scale Flintstones car, but it was just a prop. It wouldn't roll. So when they told me that we're going to be testing the Flintstone car, I instantly, like my little kid, you know, I went back to when I was a little kid. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is kind of like the greatest moment. Like I get to see if I can actually build a Flintstone car. Everybody else was like, this is lame. This is stupid. It'll never work. It'll be too heavy. But I'll tell you what, by the end of it, everybody was like everyone was so happy to see it come together. They all, you know, it softened their hearts, their bitter hearts.
Yeah, this seems super cool.
It looks like the rollers are made of like actual poured concrete discs, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, and we took those, you know, big like base, they're molds. You know, it's like the big tubes, sauna tubes that you fill up with concrete. That's what we did.
And so how much does this thing weigh? Because it's like two giant tree trunks carved and then a bunch of stone slabs and concrete.
Yeah. So just to give you an idea, each wheel weighed about 1,600 pounds. So it's well over a ton.
And it has no prop electric motor or anything, right? It's foot powered?
No.
Awesome.
Totally idiot powered right there. You see right there.
And I take it there's no way to steer it whatsoever.
There is not.
Okay. 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 Cool.
It's true to the cartoon,
so,
right?
Just wondering, what is the myth that it's possible to push one of these with your feet at all?
The myth is, can if you had a Flintstone car, could you theoretically start it and stop it with nothing but human power? So that's what we set
I'm
out
to go
guess.
I'm going to go with a hell to the no, Bob.
Well, I know. I bet if you get up and push it depends on the rolling resistance, but the whole like sitting down and just pulling it with your hamstrings.
With just your, just tightening tough. Your hamstrings and calves. Yeah, yeah. Right.
But this is so cool.
Is my face giving it away in that photo?
The picture is a bit of a giveaway. Although, frankly, it looks like Busy and Faye are faking it.
Yeah. But look at that burnout. See that little donut skid on the ground?
Uh-huh.
That was from a different car.
All right, so the Flintstones one, that seems fun. What else? What other kind of stuff you got going on there?
The other one, we did so many. One, which is another one that was fun, but it was disgusting, is that the cooling an engine using urine.
Wow. Wow.
Just because, like, Bear Grylls style, that's what you got?
I've never heard that.
Exactly. Yeah, so we found that this guy online apparently was like broke down in the middle of the desert. His radiator broke and it was leaking fluid. And so the only fluid he had to top it off was urine. So he filled it up with pee. And apparently he claimed that he was able to drive. So we went out to test that. And it was, if you ever,
no.
Urine smells bad. Month old urine
no.
is even
oh,
worse.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
Because we had to collect it, right? We had in the bathroom, we had.
Well, isn't part of the myth like garbage. Have to be like what you can pee out? I mean, the guy was on the side of the desert. He wasn't collecting pee, he only had what was
See,
in his bladder.
Good point.
See, you're smart.
I think you guys took it too far.
So listen, this is what we. This is the scenario we came up with. And BC and I both, we drank. At the beginning of the morning, we drank almost a gallon of water each, and then we tried to see how long we could hold it for, and then we wanted to see how much a human, you know, an average person holding pee, how much pee they would do. And I think we ended up getting a little over a quart
each.
And so we were like, well, what if there were three people in this vehicle?
Oh, yeah, because you test the myth and then you optimize, right? So what about the ideal scenario? Right. Yes, of course.
Yeah, yeah. So
so that's the month of pee. Ew.
The month of pee. So in the bathroom, in the bathroom, we had jars. And so instead of peeing into the urinal, we pee into the jar and then put it in a plastic bag. It was very, you know, tight. It was very... Because, I mean, it's kind of gross, right?
It's super gross. Yes, it's very gross. I'm with you on the
and
gross
so
level.
As so now they just let it sit in the bathroom. We had this shelf with all these jars of pee in bags. And then it was somebody's job to, like, pour it into a gallon, you know, gallon bucket so that we could take it out to set. But, oh, God, I mean, the smell, and it was disgusting. Like some of these people, like some people on our crew, they need to go to the doctor and get that shit checked out because like there was some cloudy pee and there was like some stuff in their pee that it was just like...
Some people like, were not
you might
hydrated
have some
enough.
Disease, bro.
Were they labeled by name? Jesus Christ, man. You guys are insured.
I hope they were labeled by name. You don't want to share. It's not just one jar.
Oh, man. And then you had to put it into an engine.
Ugh. A hot engine. So imagine month-old pee and then steaming pee. It, like, even though we were wearing our masks, we had those like heavy-duty respirators. The stench still got through there. It was this,
dude,
like as soon as you poured it in, it started steaming, and there was a couple moments where we almost threw up.
Oh, that's so gross. That's so gross.
This poor track.
And then if it overheats again, it just...
And then you burn the truck. You just light it on fire. Yeah, get the explosives out.
The whole truck on
just
fire.
Light it. Just to take a torch to it. Get a flamethrower.
So, but in the myth, do you have to fix the leak also, or did... You know, was it like a race against time where you're like, okay, he peed a gallon and now he's got to drive half a mile before the truck explodes?
It was more like that. It was more like a race. So it's like, okay, you're an emergency situation. And this is going to be helpful to people. You know, if somebody is broke down, you know, if they break down on the side of the road because of a overheated engine, you know, this is going to be one of those episodes where people are going to go, you saved my life. Because you know what you taught me in that episode.
I hate to say that you
spoiler alert, but apparently, I guess you can run the car on pee if you pee coolant.
Oh no,
if you
no.
Have to.
So there was two aspects of the myth. It was, can you like use urine to top off your radiator? But then there was, what if you filled the entire thing with urine? Now, I'm not going to tell you what happened.
God.
But yeah.
Wow.
So it was disgusting.
Yeah, it looks like no one can go back to Willow Springs ever again.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, the good news is at Willow Springs, you'd never know.
It just dries out immediately.
You'd never know. It just vanishes into the...
It smells like urine in parts of the track.
That's a tough place to film, Willow Springs. The wind, ugh, it's hell on audio. Worst.
True.
Yeah. But you know what? I was watching Ford versus Ferrari, and that opening race in the movie there at Willow Springs, and I was just there.
Location spotting in Ford versus Ferrari is really fun because they made the movie on a much smaller budget than you think, so they had to replicate a lot of European locations in America.
Yeah,
and so they assembled a really interesting collection of corners that were probably inspired by the corners at Le Mans to actually play the corners at Le Mans. So they used three or four different racetracks around the country, mostly Road Atlanta, but they used three or four tracks around the country to assemble a very Le Mans-like looking track. But they used Willow Springs for that opening scene, and I thought it was hilarious that they had to decorate the set fucking zero. They didn't change anything.
Gotta make it look old, guys.
They just parked old cars there, and it's like, here we go. Period piece.
That's lunch.
There literally has not changed in 50 years.
And then they used the Hyundai Proving Grounds at the very end to replicate Riverside, which is no longer there. But location spotting was fun.
And that movie, like, you know, a lot of it shot at night anyway, so that's a good way to hide.
Yeah, and you know, and Superformance provided all the cars, and a couple folks bought some of the prop cars and started like driving them around LA. So it's kind of interesting to see them in like car shows and
so
stuff.
Cool.
They got one of them got me. I was like, oh shit, Le Mans car in the house. Oh, never mind. That's fucking Ford. Why does it sound like a Subaru? do you what do you drive? Do you have any fun cars, or have you had fun cars in your life?
I have a 73 Camaro split bumper. Yeah. Which I got actually from the original series. We were testing, can you run a car on ethanol or moonshine?
Oh yeah,
and
I remember that
So we took an old car, you know, the 70s car, the Camaro, which had a carburetor, and then we took a modern day Camaro and made like, it was like 98 proof ethanol that, you know, that we have this. Okay, you see that photo right there? See how it's not split bumper anymore?
Yeah.
Or split fender? Somebody stole my split fenders and put that on there.
What?
Is that crazy? Yeah. Wait,
they stole yours and then they left another bumper?
Is that the weirdest thing you've ever heard?
That's, he won't even notice.
Like, who does that?
I've what never a nice heard of thief. Anything like that.
That is really funny.
I had it.
Maybe it was like Chip Foose or something. Is Chris Jacobs around? Like, what the fuck?
Is that crazy? Because I bought the car from the show when the show ended. They're like, we're getting rid of the, you know, the props. I'm like, what are you guys going to do with the Camaro? And they're like, we're getting rid of it. I'll take it. So I bought it and it wasn't running. So I sent it down to there's a shop in South San Francisco and they got it running again. And they're like, you can just keep it parked here until you're ready. You know, they had a big parking lot in front of the shop. And it was like in a gated parking area, right? They're like, you can just leave it here until you're ready to get it out of here. And then I got called to do that show, which was Sticker Shock. And it was on Velocity Channel, I think, was at the time. And it was basically, you bring your car on and you go, how much you think the car is worth? And then they assess it, maybe appraise it, and they're like, it's actually worth this much. And you go, yeah. Oh my God, it's worth way more.
It's like Antiques Roadshow for cars.
Exactly, for cars. And so it's sitting in the, you know, the showroom, and I'm like, yeah, it's a, you know, a 73 Camaro split fender. And I looked at it and I was like, wait, it's, I was like, why is there a solid fender? And then I had to go back into my old photos and I have evidence of it when it was a split fender. And while it was in that parking lot, somebody came in, pulled out the split fenders and put on that piece of crap. I mean, is that the craziest
thing?
That's
so funny. I mean, it's
unbelievable.
My mind says it's an inside job at the shop. That's what my mind says.
I don't know
if it was an inside job. I think, you know, it's like if this is a shop and people are coming in and out of this shop, somebody saw it.
Oh, it's an adjacent job. Yeah, adjacent to job.
No, it wasn't in their shop. Because I called my buddy. I'm like, dude, my fenders are gone. There's like, it's like the split fenders. And he's all, and they replaced it? I'm all, yeah. It's like, What a thoughtful thief.
That's so crazy. That's amazing. I've not heard of that before. But could you run it on ethanol?
No. Yeah. We could not. It just choked out. But the modern Camaro did.
It actually does. Yeah.
85
flex fuel, yeah. Flex fuel vehicle.
Oh, yeah. It's like race fuel. Yeah.
Well, that's also you know, Back to the Future 3. You know, the fucking injection manifold blows out the back of the car. They try to run it on moonshine. Doesn't go well for the doc.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right.
I have a book, like you with Star Wars, I was a Back to the Future nerd, so I'm like a few years after you, I think, and I have a book, I have a bunch of nerdy-ass Back to the Future books, but one of them is about the development process of the DeLorean and all the future parts and all the time travel parts and all that stuff and how they made it, and I thought it was the most interesting thing ever, how they just went to whatever that Apex Electrics or whatever that place is and just found a whole bunch of crazy shit. You know, it's got to look it's got to look like it works, but it's got to look homemade. It can't look too professional. I mean, it's really interesting repurposing of stuff, you know.
Yeah, god, that series of movies is just genius.
Back to the Future is, you know, like Zach was talking about Starship Troopers. Like, I went to art school, and in the film class I took, they were talking about how Back to the Future is like the perfect screenplay. It has like every element of good screenwriting in there. It's so good that you forget that it's fundamentally about incest.
Right. He kisses his mother.
Yeah. It's going it gets weird in the 50s, you know?
Yeah. Hey, no judgment here.
No, but
you,
like,
do what you gotta do.
Such a good movie that it doesn't matter. It's okay.
Everyone's like, yeah, it's okay. Time machine.
We just let that one slide.
Yeah.
Are you still getting to do movie prop stuff these days, or is your time consumed with busting myths?
Not anymore. I mean, you know, once Mythbusters kind of took off, the original series, there was times when we would have breaks in between seasons that, you know, I could sneak away and work on stuff, but the schedule got so busy that it was just, it was impossible to do. And now it's like, you know, I stay busy with doing the shows, that it's just, I mean, sometimes I miss it. Like I miss just sitting there and building a cool model or whatever, you know, building kind of sets or whatever. But, you know, TV pays way better than modeling.
Yeah, I bet. When you do like what, you know, in a, I'm in the original Mythbusters, and I imagine in this one, you know, the bits are set up to fit in the half hour or 60 minute block, you know, as it were. And but, you know, like a Pimp My Ride or an Overhaulin', you know, I imagine that is edited for convenience and not reality. You know, some of those myths that you guys set up involve building some pretty large and or complicated contraptions and getting locations and stuff like that. So like, how long would you guys spend on some of those individual science experiments?
You bring up a really good point, and it is frustrating because it's not something where we could just knock out in a day. You know, like we did one myth that was that the old hot rodders figured out that if you chop your vehicle by lowering the roof, you lower the profile, make it more aerodynamic, less, you know, drag, that they would get them to go faster that way, right? And I thought that was pretty interesting because, you know, you see these old hot rods that were chopped, and it was like, was that just like a aesthetic thing? Or, you know, it looks super cool, but the whole point was to make them go faster, to make them more aerodynamic, right? And so we set out to test that. So we took an old 70s van, took it out to the runway, just slammed on the brake or the gas as fast as we can go, just, you know, for a quarter mile.
It's like an 18-second quarter mile, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Totally. And we wanted to see what the max speed was of that van. Then we brought it back to the shop, and we were going to chop it, take it back out to the runway, and run the test again and see if we got it to go any faster. But we had to do the chopping ourselves, and so that process took forever. I mean, no. In my mind, I'm thinking, like, let's just, like, chop it, drop it, screw it together, hit it with some Bondo, and we're done.
Yeah.
But we really wanted to kind of look at the artistry and the craftsmanship of doing it. So we did it the legit way. We had a team of fabricators who actually have done chops, you know, have done chops before. And they kind of were with us the whole way, but BC and I had to do a lot of the work ourselves. And it was awesome because now I know how to chop a car, but.
What was the hardest part of that? The windshield?
The windshield was tough. The hardest part was just the amount of welding and filling. You know, it was just so time consuming. You just kind of put on your welding helmet and just go into a zone, and it was just like, you know, cut, put together, weld, fill. I mean, it's like a mind numbing process because there's so much, like, just, you know, work that you have to do, and it's just, you know, repetitive. But from the time that we did that first run, it was probably toward like the beginning of the season when we filmed. So like maybe 2 months or 3 months later,
yeah,
we tested it at the end. So it was like from the beginning of that episode to the end of that episode, about 2 months elapsed in between.
Yeah. That's a wow. long turnaround. Well, you have to do all the work in between too.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, you're farming all of it out to a third party shop. If you're physically doing it, that seems involved.
But we also had a team of amazing builders. So it was like, this was kind of one of those projects where it was like around the clock. So it was like, if we were filming on location, they would be on the van trying to get it finished. And then we'd get back to the shop and they're like, okay, we need shots of you doing the work, and so we would be building. It was crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine, but that's what I hear from, you know, anyone who's ever been on any kind of a build show. It's always just you know, it's the timelines of how it looks on TV versus how it is in reality are always substantially different.
Yeah. Well, like those makeover shows, a lot of those home renovation shows, from working with producers who would have done those shows, they're like, a lot of these times these hosts don't even do the work. They're like, okay, I'm going to hammer this and paint this. And then they leave, and then the builders come in and do the work. And
I'm not shocked.
Us, we, like, there was a lot of times where we don't even know how to build. You know, it's like, I don't even know how the heck I would build this. So, you know, it's a process of getting in there, getting your hands dirty, and figuring it out.
Well, I'm sure some content comes from, there's some good moments when you guys are trying to figure something out, and it's genuine. You're like, oh, we're going to have a problem if we do this, because you're trying to figure out the system, like the pull tab thing. So if you had someone else do that and you just walked in and you're like, oh, okay, it all works, like you'd lose a little bit of, I think, the richness of the experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was kind of why our show, I think, was so successful, and hopefully this will, you know, resonate as well, is because we are kind of like the audience. We the audience sees us, and they're going through the process at the same time we are. You know, where you think something's going to work, and then you go do it, and then it completely
blows
up your face.
Well, you have to prove that it works. Yeah, yeah. I mean, a lot of build shows, you know, whether it's a hot rod or a project car or an apartment or house flip, it's like, like my friend Carl used to say, and he was a TV chef, and he'd say, I love cooking on TV because if I tell you it tastes good, you have no choice but to believe me. and he was a genius, and he was right, you know. And but on MythBusters, you actually have to demonstrate that the thing works, or maybe it doesn't, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and it's pretty obvious whether it works or not. I mean, sometimes it's painfully obvious.
Yeah.
You know, there were times, but I mean, that's, and I think that's the charm of the show, is it doesn't have to be, you know, if it doesn't work, that's busted. You know what I mean? It's not like we're trying to make these things work every time. It's like, either it works or it doesn't. And
well, that's another actually back end genius of the show, is it's like, if it doesn't work, it's not necessarily because like you couldn't do it, and like, you know what I mean? It's like you're determining whether it's like the same. Yeah, if you say it can't be done, what fucking choice do I have but to believe you?
You know? But we used to get hammered on like the chat boards or online, where we would say it didn't work, and then people would just be like frothing at the mouth. They're like, the reason it didn't work is because you're an idiot.
Oh my God. Talk about a comment section you don't want to wade into. The MythBusters comment section. Oh my God. You think mine are bad? Holy shit. MythBusters comment section.
A lot of Monday morning.
Fuck out of here. No, thank you.
A lot of Monday morning quarterbacks. Oh, but what was nice, though, is it forced us to look at what we had done and to see if these suggestions were valid. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they were, and we were like, okay, we did get it wrong, and we're admitting it, and thank you for pointing it out. It could have been nicer about it, but whatever. We're going to get it done.
It's never because they're pointing out that you missed something or don't know something. It's always in the attitude of the point out.
Well, I think it's like, you're like, I could do the job better than you or something. I don't know what it is, but luckily for us, we had, you know, it gives us the opportunity to go back and retest it.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes we're like, all right, you know, you were right. We were wrong.
Thanks. You just gave us another show. I just pocketed
another
day rate.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm talking about.
If you can rebust it, it takes 6 months. Ooh, 6 months of day rates. Give me more fuck ups. I'll retest everything.
I'll keep messing up.
That's awesome. Zach, did we have any specific Tory questions from the people?
A lot of compliments. A lot of
reminder that, Beezy does Tech Tuesday on his Instagram Live, answering crazy engineering questions. Weirenfelt wants to know if Motor MythBusters has an in-house racing driver or needs one.
You know, Beezy is kind of like, you know, I would say out of, between he and I, he has more racing experience, but I also like to race. So I think we're covered. But if one of us crashes and dies, we'll let you know. There'll be an opening.
Well, you like to do a lot of the stunts and the driving and all that stuff, right? Like, you're the daredevil of the group, or is that you?
Totally. And it was so funny because
he got so happy when he said it.
But it was funny because, like, for 12 years, I did this show on the original series, and you just kind of get used to doing crazy stuff where a normal person would walk in and you're like, wait a minute, you're going to drive that car on two wheels until it rolls like that. You're trying to get that to happen. And it's like, yeah, that's what we're doing. And so now you have BC and Faye coming in, and they're all about making the cars work properly and making them, look good and doing everything the proper way. And then I come in and I'm like, well, let's just rip that off and do this, and we'll just weld this here, and then I'll drive it and we'll see if it blows up or not. And they're just kind of like, what are you talking about? Like,
movie prop guy in the house.
And there was a scene we did one. It was from the movie Strange Brew. Do you remember Strange Brew?
Oh yeah.
Take off, eh? Yeah. The beer drinking Canadians. And in the movie, we're testing one of the myths from the movie. The bad guy cuts their brakes, and he cuts the brakes so that they can make two full stops, but then their third stop, the brakes will fail, and then they'll crash and die. So we took a van, tampered with the brakes, and I took BC for a ride, and his eyes were like saucers. Like, he was so freaked out by my driving, and he was like, you're nuts. I don't know. Like,
well, in fairness, you had no brakes. I mean, if you're driving in a manner when there's already no brakes, I can understand his fear. Yeah. I've lost brakes in a car. I've blown a brake line. Remember the Toyota Previa?
Mm-hmm.
I've blown a brake line going down a very large mountain in a very old, shitty car. And we were able to downshift our way down to safety. But that was the
end.
That's
terrifying.
It was, there was nothing left. It was fucked. So I understand Busy's fear in that situation.
That's scary. No, yeah, we were in a controlled environment, and there was a situation. We had like a device that would stop us from crashing into a building. But that device, that could have actually...
It's called a bumper.
Was it like hay bales?
Yeah. Or like... No, we took 50-gallon or 80-gallon drums and plastic barrels and filled them with water. And that was our stopping...
That's another good myth, mechanism. From Speed, like from the movie where they crashed the Jaguar XJS into that.
Yeah, hopefully we get a season 2. I got so many... myth for season 2. Do you remember Lone Wolf McQuaid with Chuck Norris?
No, I was never a Chuck Norris fan. I think you missed me by half a generation there on the Chuck Norris.
Well, you should see it
for
your own
memes.
You should see it for your own edification. David Carradine, Chuck Norris, Lone Wolf McQuaid. But there's a scene where he's got a supercharged Bronco. They beat him up, dig a hole with the tractor, bury him alive, or like left him for dead, put him in his Bronco, put the Bronco in the ditch, and then bury it to he's gonna suffocate and die. And he
wakes up,
he has, for some reason, he has like a six-pack of beer in his car. He cracks the beer open, takes a swig, dumps it on his forehead, like washes his face, and then puts that Bronco into gear and drives it out of this car grave.
Oh, here we go. The scene is on YouTube. Good news, folks.
Oh, yeah.
The scene is on the tubes. Oh, there's the beer crack. Yep, got the beer crack going on. Oh, there's some nice classic trucks in this one, 1983. And then he drives it just right out of the hole. That's
great. Right.
Cool. Yeah.
Cool. I want to test that.
Who buried a... Didn't someone just bury a car?
Who we buried a
Did
Range
he try
Rover.
To drive it out?
No, because I don't...
Did it run afterwards?
I think they unburied it and then it ran. Oh my God, he is driving
this. This YouTuber, that's awesome. Yeah, this YouTuber Tyler Hoover buried a Range Rover.
Oh my God, it blasted out of there.
That was a pretty good scene. I like that. That's
it,
fun.
It didn't even just like crawl gear for it. It was like launch.
It was like a submarine, like yeah. Hunt for Red October.
Like, exactly. Yeah.
Like it was doing 60 miles an hour and hit a ramp.
There's a Tesla 100D. That's your optimum launch. Oh man. Well, this show sounds like a lot of fun, Tori. Thanks for coming on. Motor Trend app, Motor Trend on demand, Motor Trend all the things, right?
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
Are you when it's convenient for you and your all this weirdo Delta stuff dies down, you come by, you do the in studio show, hang out with us for a while, and we'll bullshit more.
Absolutely. Yeah, would love that. Absolutely.
When is this premiering? Is it up now?
August 4th.
August 4th. All right. Tori, Faye Hadley, and BC Ezrioja, our boy who builds crazy fucking shit, busting motor myths on the Motor Trend on demand, on Motor Trend app, all those places you watch Motor Trend things. Thanks, Tori. Thank you very much. And
thank you, guys.
We are back tomorrow. Steve Dinan, famous BMW tuner, racer, now has a tuning company called Carbon. He's on at 10:30 a.m. If you're not listening to the show live, this means absolutely nothing. But that's our show. We will see you guys later. Bye.